So Kuru was coming to Vrindavan on the mission of Kamsa, but actually he was going externally as Kamsa's representative, and he's going internally as the best of the Yadus, Yadutama, and also as a dear servant of Krishna. So as he traveled, he was thinking and thinking and thinking and thinking about Krishna. His mind was filled with Krishna in a favorable way. So it's devotional service, anukulena Krishna nasiva. And then he saw the footprints of Krishna. He got off his chariot and he rolled in the dust of Braja, which carried the footprints of Krishna. And this indeed is the perfection of life. And then we saw Krishna and Balaram yesterday. We spent, we had quite 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 verses describing what he saw. And it was quite amazing. Do you remember? It's amazing. You don't remember, because you were busy. Very beautiful. Why not? I'll read it. Krishna and Balaram in the village of Braj, going to milk the cows. First the cowherd boys and Krishna saw a chariot coming. And they thought, who is this? A chariot. He doesn't have any weapons, so he's not coming to attack us. And in Vrindavan, no one has chariots. They just have bullock carts. So they understood that he's come from far away. Because Vrindavan, after all, is a village. A village, a most wonderful village. Why is it most wonderful? Because it is made famous because of the residents of Vrindavan. So the cowherd boys, of course they are village boys. So what do they do? What would village boys do if they see a fancy chariot from the big city coming? Climb a tree, that's what the monkeys do. Not the cowherd boys. The cowherd boys, they want to go see that even to this very day. There's something fancy that everyone comes and they'll just come in. If you're sitting there or something and you have a pen or something, just come and sit next to you. Because they're curious. And quite simple-hearted. So simple-hearted in a pretty crooked way, but simple-hearted. Village tattva, village way of being. But like children in a certain way, noisy children. So they saw Krishna and Balaram in the village of Braja going to milk the cows. And Krishna wore yellow garments. Try to picture this. Balaram blue, and their eyes resembled animal lotuses. One of those two mighty armed youths the shelter of the goddess of fortune, had a dark blue complexion, and the other was white. And Balaram's blue cloth, the color of his dhoti and everything, was blue, but it was blue with gold in it, because Krishna's his dhoti was yellow like lightning. So Balaram had gold as lightning colors in his blue dhoti, streaked with lightning. With their fine featured faces, they were the most beautiful of all persons. Well, that's just such a wonderful concept to meditate on. Most beautiful, not beautiful, not very beautiful, not more beautiful, but most beautiful. Now, what? How beautiful is most beautiful? It is most beautiful. Unlimitedly beautiful, actually. That's Krishna, and that's why he's all attractive. But not only was Krishna's fine featured face more beautiful than anyone else, Krishna and Balaram walked with the gait of young elephants, glancing about with compassionate smiles. Those two exalted personalities beautified the cow pastures with the impressions of their feet, which bore the marks of the flag of the lightning bolt, the elephant goat, and the lotus. The two lords whose pastimes are most magnanimous. We spoke about the word magnanimous yesterday, and how were Krishna's pastimes magnanimous and attractive. So they were generous, but they were also so attractive. So because if someone is being generous and doing something in a very generous spirit, and if we're not attracted, it won't do us any good. But they're both magnanimous, fully generous, munificent, and fully attractive. What Krishna does is all attractive. So one is attracted, and then one can get the great benefit of his attraction. What is the benefit of his attraction, of being attracted to Krishna? His pastimes, the benefit is simple, that one is attracted to Krishna and his pastimes. And in fact, the spark of one's attraction to Krishna somehow ignites it in the heart. That spark will take us from this world of what? Birth and death, that's what I was thinking of, birth and death. If we accept the philosophy in just a simple way, here we are going on many days, but 70 years ago, who would we? Well, for some of us, even 30 years ago, who were we? What kind of bodies were we in? And 70 years from now, what kind of bodies will we be in? And here we are thinking that this life is everything, and I have this huge, very important, extremely consequential, what's the next word? Problem. That's what I was thinking. I have this huge problem, like that letter that he was mentioning. Remember that time in Melbourne? He was saying the kind of things he has to deal with. And he said, they hit me, my dear Prabhupada, I am the most insignificant, fallen, useless, insignificant. I have this huge problem. So of course, you can't be insignificant and have a huge problem. If you're insignificant, you can only have an insignificant problem, but we don't think of it quite like that. So, Krishna's pastimes are most magnanimous and attractive, and because they're attractive, they can inject in our heart a taste for something beyond this world of birth and death. He was ornamented with jeweled necklaces and flower garlands, anointed with auspicious fragrant substances, freshly bathed and dressed in spotless raiment garments. They were the primeval personalities of Godhead, the masters and original causes of the universe, and after the welfare of the earth now descended in their distinct forms as Keshava and Balaram. O King Pandit, they resemble two gold-bedecked mountains, one of emerald and the other of silver. As with their effulgence, they dispel the sky's darkness in all directions. Because it was, because what time did Akura arrive? Does anyone remember? Just as the sun was setting. So when the sun is setting, it's getting dark. But because of the effulgence of Krishna and Balaram, they dispelled the sky's darkness. And that effulgence was so powerful that it was all directions. So what did Akura do? He was rolling in the dust. He was overwhelmed with affection. He quickly jumped down from his chariot and fell at the feet of Krishna and Balaram like a rod, because he had been thinking, when I see Krishna and Balaram, I'm going to fall down and I'm going to stay at Krishna's feet, and then Krishna will raise me up and Balaram will take me by the hands. So he immediately fell down at the feet of Krishna and Balaram like a rod. So he was so much closer to Krishna and Balaram. He was their uncle, very elder to their father, and yet he fell down at their feet. How is Krishna going to deal with this? Because Krishna usually will follow the etiquette. So the joy first occurred. The joy of seeing the Supreme Lord flooded Akura's eyes with tears and decorated his limbs with eruptions of ecstasy, because he was directly in touch with the all-powerful, Krishna, the all-charismatic, the all-attractive, the unlimitedly beautiful was standing before him. All-attractive. So he was erupting, his body was erupting in ecstasy. And he felt such eagerness that he could not speak to present himself, O King. So he couldn't say anything even. He was just completely, basically confused. Confused, bewildered, stunned, in ecstasy. And Krishna recognized him, even though Akura didn't say, I am your uncle Akura. Krishna recognized him. Akura couldn't say anything. And Krishna, Jiva Goswami describes that Krishna was actually pained to see the confusion of Akura. So he neglected to treat him like an elder, a superior, an uncle. And he just simply drew him close with his hand, which bears the signs of the chariot wheel, and then embraced him. So this is what Akura was projecting was going to happen. Krishna felt pleased, for he is always benignly disposed towards his surrendered devotees. What is benignly? Benign mean? Favorable. Yeah, and the opposite, when we're talking about cancer, is malignant. So that if there's a tumor and it's benign, it's not harmful in any way, but it's addicting, basically, in this case. So he placed, Krishna felt pleased, and does anyone remember? He drew him close with his hand, which bears the sign of, can I remember? A chariot wheel. And then embraced him. I'll mention that again because in the purport, short purport, it says, according to the acharyas, by extending his hand, Krishna's hand, walked with the chariot wheel of chakra, as Krishna indicated his ability to kill Kamsa. As Akura stood with his head bowed, he still hadn't said anything. Then Krishna acted with because who was the elder brother? Balaram. So Balaram should take the lead. He wouldn't take Balaram's position here. So as Akura stood with his head bowed, Lord Shankarshan, Balaram, grasped his joined hands, just as he had hoped Balaram would do. And then Balaram took him to his house in the company of Lord Krishna. And then they began to treat him properly. Then etiquette kicked in. There's specific etiquettes when one treats a guest, an honored guest especially, or any guest, but an honored guest. They inquired from Akura whether his trip had been comfortable. Balaram offered him a first-class seat. He bathed his feet in accordance with the injunctions of the scriptures, and he respectfully served him milk with honey. And then Lord Balaram presented Akura with the gift of honey. Give him a hint. It's spelled with three letters and it goes moo. You guessed it, cow. But one would think, well, what is the crow? The cow right there, but he ended up not doing that, and they don't tell you what happened to the cow either. I mean, you couldn't put your cow on the chariot and fish and all around.
If you got a doctor from your cow, you
can't
have your cow.
You should obviously put it in your car, the back seat of your car, that's true. I hadn't thought of it like that. But I guess there was some kind of etiquette, because sometimes people would come and they'd give them thousands of cows, and you know what?
Maybe charity
or something. Yeah. Anyway, did something. He left it behind and said, thank you so much.
Can you give it to somebody else?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But that's the etiquette. Someone comes and you give them gifts, and they feel so welcome because they feel the affection that you're feeling for them. And then Balaram offered him a cow and then massaged his feet to relieve him of fatigue. And then with great respect and faith, fed him suitably prepared food of various fine tastes. So he had just come from a long journey and refreshed by the culture and what to speak of Krishna and Balaram and acting the culture, the etiquettes. According to Srila Vishnu Thakavati, Akura went to Krishna's and Balaram's house on the 12th lunar day, on which one should not break a fast night. However, Akura dispensed with this formality because he was eager to receive food in the house, in the Lord's house. Akura was spoken to by Kamsa Nikadasi. He arrived on the 12th day of the moon, and then he left on the 13th day, and the festival, or the Dhanajigya, and the festival was supposed to take place on the Chaturdasi, the 14th day. When Akura had eaten to his satisfaction, Lord Balaram, the supreme knower of religious duties, offered him aromatic herbs for sweetening his mouth, along with fragrances and flower garlands. Thus Akura once again enjoyed the highest pleasure. Nanda Maharaj asked Akura, after he was settled, then Nanda Maharaj came in. All descendants of Darsaha, how are all of you maintaining yourselves while that merciless Kamsa remains alive? You are just like sheep under the care of a butcher. That cruel, self-serving Kamsa made the infants of his own sister in her presence. So who can understand? I mean, the devotees certainly can't understand this type of mentality. And why Nandamaj is so critical of him? You're all under the care, you're staying in Mathura under the care of Kamsa, who is so cruel that it's a wonder that you're still alive. You're alive just by his whim, in one sense. Like a sheep at any moment can be killed by the, if he's living under the shelter of the slaughterhouse, at any moment he can be killed. A whim, he can be killed. So this is your situation, because why he's so cruel? Well, he's so hard-hearted that he and cruel and self-serving. What does self-serving mean? Asutrip, self-indulgent, kala, cruel. What does self-serving mean? Only thinks about himself. And what is good for him is what happens, what he considers is good for him. He doesn't care about anyone else or their needs. And things he considered good or bad or acceptable or worthy to be rejected, how much pleasure it's going to give him or how much pleasure something is not going to give him. So this is not the behavior and the mentality of a mental person. He said that cruel, self-serving Kamsa. How do we know he's that? Is he that bad, really? He even murdered the infants of his own sister in her presence. Three horrendous things. Infants, murdering infants. Of his own sister. How hard-hearted does one have to be like that? In her own presence, even as she cried in anguish, he's so hard and cruel, he didn't care. So why should we even ask about the well-being of you, his sisters? How could you be well? Because you're supposed to gently, when someone comes, you gently inquire about their well-being, but how could we even ask about your well-being? Because we already know that your situation is so precarious. Look who's the one who's protecting you. Look at the one whose shelter you're living under. It's Kamsa, who's unlimitedly cruel. He's unlimitedly hard-hearted. Look what he's done. So honored by Nanda Maharaj with these true and pleasing words of inquiry, Akura forgot the fatigue of his journey. Let's see if Vishnu Chakravarti takes any comments on this. When Akura saw Krishna Balaram, when he was coming, bowed at his feet, he backed off his chariot. Akura could not introduce himself, properly saying, "I, Akura, offer my respects to you." He couldn't say anything, he was so ecstatic. Okay. Here, this is talking about giving a cow. Offering a cow, this is Bhagavati Thakur, is one of the various upacharas or items of worship, such as pouring water over the guest's feet. In order to give pleasure to the eyes of one's guests, a beautiful cow is brought forward with the thought, please look upon this cow, she is yours. The word "medhi" means appropriate for the Dwadasi breakfast. In other words, rice was taken on Dwadasi to break the Dwadasi Vrata. Kamsa was killed 2 days later on the Chaturdasi on the occasion of worshipping Bhutaraj, Lord Shiva. There was a rule that one should not break a fast during the night, but a Kura broke the rule because of his eagerness to receive food grains at Krishna's home. Nanda Maharaj asked the Kura, "O descendant of Dasara, how are you all maintaining yourselves while that merciless King Kamsa remains alive? He was just like sheep under the care of a butcher." "How are you," Vishwanath says, "how are you living?" This is what Nanda Maharaj was asking. "How are you living? You are like sheep whose keeper is a killer of animals. You do not know when you will all be killed." That's how bad Kamsa was. "The cruel, self-serving Kamsa murdered the infants of his own sister in her presence, even if she cried in anguish. So why should we even ask about the well-being of you, his subjects? You're dependent upon someone for protection who would even kill his own sister's children, infants." So being thoroughly treated hospitably as a guest with gentle questions, Akura gave up his doubts about obtaining Krishna's mercy and the anxiety due to suffering from that doubt. He gave that up because he saw so much affection and kinship shown and how he was greeted, etc. So the beginning of the next chapter. Having been honored, that was the end of the last chapter. Having, Sukhita Goswami said, having been honored so much by Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna, Akura, seated comfortably on a couch, felt that all the desires he had contemplated on the road were now fulfilled. Because this is the glory of entering the holy place with one's consciousness focused on obtaining that which is meant to be obtained in a holy place. We're meant to go to a holy place. We're meant to go to a holy place to hear, to serve, so that we can advance. So the fruit he felt, to see the Lord ultimately. So the fruit he felt was achieved by him. Everything that he had dreamed for, everything that he hoped for, has come true. Next time we go to Vrindavan or Mayapur, we should keep all this in mind and keep our hopes very, very lofty. By Krishna's grace, as he desires, they can all come true. Then, Sukadeva says, "My dear King, what is unattainable for one who has satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the shelter of the Goddess of Fortune? Even so, those who are dedicated to his devotional service never want anything from him. So one can get everything if one satisfies Krishna, but the desires of the devotee are not to take, they are only to give." The exalted consciousness of the devotee is described. After the evening meal, Lord Krishna, the son of Devaki, now he's called the son of Devaki, asked Akura how Kamsa was treating their dear relatives and friends, and what the king was planning to do. What is his plan? Supreme Lord said, "My dear and gentle Uncle Purna, was your trip here comfortable? May all good fortune be yours. Are our well-wishing friends and our relatives, both close and distant, happy and in good health?" So he spoke not as directly as Nanda Maharaj did. "But my dear Akura, as long as King Kamsa, that disease of our family who goes by the name of maternal uncle," he's maternal, he's uncle, a relative in name only, "as long as he is still prospering, why should I even bother to ask about the well-being of our family members and his other subjects?" More or less he's saying the same thing that Nanda said, but speaking a little less directly, which is appropriate, because he's younger than, so much younger in the junior position. "Just see how much suffering I have caused my offenseless parents," meaning Vasudeva Deva. And Jiva Goswami describes how Krishna, up until this time, he was only thinking of himself as the son of Nanda Yashoda. And that the other aspect of him, of course, Krishna, two-armed Krishna, was the son of Yashoda, Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, and four-armed Vasudeva Krishna, born in Mathura, was the son of Vasudeva. But that whole aspect of Krishna's existence was far in the background, because Krishna was so absorbed in his loving pastimes with the residents of Vrindavan. But when he saw Krishna, when Krishna saw Akura, that whole aspect, that whole frame of reference came back. Just like when we were all, where were you born?
Born.
Yeah. So like here you are living in Prague, usually not thinking of Melbourne and your early days and, you know, all those days cooking for the restaurants and the Melbourne people or whatever like that. But if you see some of your old mates who come over from Melbourne, you start talking about, you know, that whole aspect of your life comes back to you, something like that. So Krishna, his whole relationship with Mathura came back to him, and he hadn't been thinking about it in the slightest bit previously. And so Krishna said, and listen to how he spoke though, "Just see how much suffering I have caused my offenseless parents. Because of me, their sons were killed and they themselves were imprisoned, because indeed they were shackled and iron chains by it, by Kamsa." Even just recently, when Narada Muni had gone to explain to Kamsa that Krishna was definitely Krishna, was the eighth son, and he was the one who had been prophesied to kill him, and the Vasudeva had taken him across the Yamuna, like that. So Krishna was aware of this, and then Kamsa, Vasudeva, brought him back in chains, shackles, Krishna's parents, and he only didn't kill them because Narada Muni intervened. So we think this is how we can think, how could someone be so cruel, kill it, put the sister and brother and kill. Look at the history of the kings in the world in Kali Yuga. This goes on all the time. They're always killing each other. They're always killing their brothers. Aurangzeb puts his father in prison. And there's a history of the Mughals in India, all the kings. And it's like a 200-year period or something where not one of them died of old age. They're all, you know, there's some intrigue, and they're all poisoned or stuffed away in some wall or something. It's someone killed in some way or another. So Krishna had said, because of me, he's saying it's my fault. I've caused my offenseless parents how much suffering I've caused them. So if he's saying it's my fault that they're suffering and that, and my offenseless parents are imprisoned, what's going to happen? And how is he going to make up to them? Go to visit them in prison? No. But if it's his fault that they're in prison, then yeah, he's going to free them by killing Kamsa. So the hint is there. Of course, he's already been told by Narada Muni that it's time to end his pastimes, but he doesn't really want to think about it. He says, well, let's see what arrangements Yogamaya has made. But herein, he's giving the hints that due to me, they've been cruelly treated and suffering. And due to me, they will be released and Kamsa's going to be killed. Because Kamsa had heard a prophecy that the eighth son of Devaki would kill him. He tried to kill all the children. For the same reason, he imprisoned her and her husband, Vasudeva. Krishna continues, by good fortune, we have today fulfilled our desire to see you, our dear relative. Oh, gentle uncle, please tell us why you have come. Sukadeva Goswami said, in response to the Supreme Lord's request, Akura, the descendant of Madhu, as Krishna is also called Madhu, because they're in the same family tradition, same family line. Akura, the descendant of Madhu, described the whole situation, including King Kamsa's enmity towards the Yadus and his attempt to murder Vasudeva. Akura relayed the message he had been sent to deliver. He also described Kamsa's real intentions. And what were Kamsa's real intentions? Because what was the message he had been sent to deliver? Come to the festival. We want to have a wrestling of you. We've heard that you are Balarama, wrestlers. You come and participate. That was the message. But he also described Kamsa's real intention, which was to kill Krishna. And how Narada had informed Kamsa that Krishna had been born as the son of Vasudeva. So when Lord Krishna and Balaram, the vanquishers of heroic opponents, when they heard this, they laughed. They heard this and they laughed. And the Lord then informed their father, Nanda Maharaj, of King Kamsa's orders. So he said, oh, father, we are now going to go to Mathura because the king has asked us to go. Now, if we don't go, the king is going to become very upset because he's invited us. So let us go, not get his wrath, increase his wrath, because he's already such a horrible person. Let us just go and then we'll just come back. Let's go quickly. He's invited us. Let's just go. And everyone, they began to pass the news around that we're going to go now to Mathura because the king has invited us. Nanda Maharaj, well, I'll be going. Nanda Maharaj said they held like a meeting and they told everyone in the village of Vrindavan. I'm going to be calling, and we're going to take milk products as a tribute for the king and also Krishna and Balaram. But don't worry, we're only going for a, we're going to, today is the 12th day of the moon on the Odyssey. And then tomorrow we leave. It's the 13th day. And then on the 15th is the festival. And then by the next day we'll be back. Don't worry. But that's not how the residents of Vrindavan accept it. And then we will hear. Well, maybe we won't hear how the Vaisa gopis felt on hearing this. Don't worry, Krishna's only going to be gone for a day, two, three. I can't believe that they were going to let him go for even 1 minute. Okay. Any questions or comments? So the love of the residents of Vrindavan is quite amazing. Quite amazing.
The crew is speaking about these things privately to Krishna and Balaram and not with Nanda Maharaj present.
Yes. No, he didn't tell Nanda Maharaj the plan. He told it to Krishna and Balaram.
Nanda Maharaj goes with Krishna.
Yeah.
He's there with him.
Yes.
But the other residents of Vrindavan don't.
Some of them go. Cowherd boys go. They all, they, it describes, Vishnath describes, Krishna describes, that they go when Krishna and Balaram go through the turf the first time. They just come back and they sleep under the carts. As they're taking it easy, they, in the next morning they wake up and they go to Yamuna. And they're late for the wrestling match. And Nanda Maharaj is afraid that Kamsa is going to get angry because it's a breaking of protocol.
Mm-hmm.
To make the king wait and
not taking seriously.
Not taking seriously. It's dangerous to not take the hit. And that whole night, actually, before the wrestling, Nanda Maharaj, he couldn't. Balaram, they slept really peacefully after breaking the bow. But Nanda Maharaj didn't sleep the whole night, and Kamsa didn't sleep the whole night. Kamsa didn't sleep out of tremendous fear of Krishna, and Nanda Maharaj couldn't sleep because of tremendous fear for Krishna, Krishna's welfare. So there's such an ironic juxtaposition. Huh? They took a shortcut and they got there before Krishna and Balaram. They went through the forest paths, not all the way down to the Yamuna.
The way
boys
go exploring places.
No, they were on the carts. They went with Nanda Maharaj.
Oh.
Because they did all kinds of things as tributes, all milk products, to try to appease Kamsa and cover up their real thoughts about him, so he would just leave them alone. So in Vrindavan, they were so afraid of Kamsa. Especially the young girls, the parents of the young girls, because he was so bad. And Srimati Radharani's parents, they were worshipping the sun god, the Surya Puja, to protect Radharani from Kamsa, things like that.
And at the time, the Kuru administration was a bit weak, was it? Because Tridrasa
was the king, but he was blind, but Pandavas
was in the forest. Yes, that's what's described. So
Vision was sort of protecting the kingdom, it wasn't managing, it was allowed to manage. So it was a bit weak, and sort of ruling terror. Yeah, because when there's weakness. It also happened tomorrow at Pratyaparudra, when Mahaprabhu Sen Shah, who was the emperor of Bengal, Godadesh. When Pratapuruja was attacked, his kingdom was attacked in the south. The Nagar side or something, but one came down there. So sometimes he had to go south to protect the kingdom. Then Hussein Shah, and that's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he said, this is my chance. There's a weakness. No compassion, just no awe. No compassion spirit. There's a weakness. How can I attack someone at a bad moment? No, this is the perfect time to attack because they're weak.
Hussein Shah attacked
his kingdom. So Pratapuruja, who was just about to win in the south, had to leave everything and come back.
Which section was his name, Chad?
Huh?
Which section was he taking from?
From the north. Because this is Orissa and Bengal to the north.
There's a strong leader in the Miskas.
If there's any weakness in this guy. Kali, that's what Kali did also with the, he saw a weakness in the Brahmins when the young boy cursed and he entered. The boy had strength, power, but he didn't have culture. And Kali entered due to that and cursed the king.
Why did Kali go to the forest?
Why? He got tired of management. Why does anyone go to the forest?
Then in the forest he became attracted to his wife.
Well, but before that he was cursed. Yeah, there's a description in the Mahabharata why he did his duty and he got everything very organized. And then he stayed as the king, but he lived and he decided, I don't want to go back, he didn't have to deal with all the problems, everyone bowing down to you, and everyone afraid. He just wanted to live a simple life. Something like that, that's what I understand. Okay, any other points, questions? Shri Vrindavan Nam Ki Jai. Maybe next